So I think this time the tape really is rolling.
Excellent. Hello, I'm Simon Mercep, and it's time for another edition of Crave, a podcast about music, films, anything else that's been keeping me and Steve McCabe amused recently. Now, we always talk about movies. This week, just one. But it's something special, isn't it, Steve? But is it special in a good way?
Well, special doesn't even really begin to describe this, does it? Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, out of the shadows. How can you go wrong with that?
I can think of one or two ways, possibly.
So tell me what's new in music.
Well, what we're looking at is new. It's a new album from release, only last week or two. It's called Stranger to Stranger, by an artist who is definitely himself not new, one Paul Simon.
Indeed. Now, Big Country aren't new either, but they're still plugging away.
Right. One guy who is new, and we can talk about him this week, he's an Auckland singer-songwriter called Miller, and he's got his first ever EP that's just come out in the last week or two. I had a chat with him, look forward to hearing from him during the program today. But let's start with films. As you said, Steve, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, colon, I think there was a colon, wasn't there?
There was indeed.
Yeah, out of the shadows.
There is a very, very rude joke about what comes out of colons to be made there. I'm not sure I'm quite right. Ready to go that far, but we'll just leave you hanging.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to say just the title and the backstory to this wouldn't have had me absolutely, you know, chomping at the bit to get there. How bowled over were you?
Less than.
Right.
I think that's the nicest thing to say. Look, there is apparently a story somewhere in this film. It's buried fairly deeply under all the padding and the waffle that goes with it. The story, as far as I could figure out, is that the four Ninja Turtles, who incidentally we no longer refer to by their full names, they're no longer Donatello and Raphael and all the rest. They're now Mikey, Donnie, Leo, and Raffi.
Right.
Yeah, I know. I hope you caught the tone in my voice there.
Yes.
Less than impressed with this. But our four heroes on a half shell, which makes you wonder what happened to the other half of the shell.
Yes.
You know, obviously they're heading toward turtle soup. But anyway, yes. they are delighted by the fact that they've put their arch enemy, nemesis Shredder, in prison. From the end of the previous episode, in installment film, whatever you want to call it, and he ends up getting busted out of prison and has to start all over again. Except that this time, for reasons that are made not in remotely clear, he finds himself teamed up with an interdimensional being called Krang, who, again, for reasons that aren't made clear, wants to take over the Earth.
Right. Okay.
Are you following?
Yeah, sort of, yes.
Because I wasn't really. I think I was just losing the will at one point. So part of this is, you know, these are all characters apparently well established in the original TV series and comic books.
Yes.
That gave rise to this nonsense. So that's what we're presented with. And obviously, you can imagine where we're going with this. The Turtles have to rein in Shredder and his two new mutant henchmen, Rocksteady.
This is the big, the rhino or the warthog or something.
There's a rhino and a warthog, both.
Yes.
This is Rocksteady and Bebop. One of them's a warthog, one of them's a rhino. Please don't ask me which is which, because I really don't care. I just had no desire to know. So that's your setup, right? That's it. Let's get out of the way. There's a story, apparently. It's nonsense. It's absolute twaddle. This is not about the story.
No.
What's really going on is we get the backstory of Rocksteady and Bebop, this pair of mutant horned creatures. And they get turned into this because of some slime or goop or whatever it is that Krang, the interdimensional conqueror, has brought with him. And it converts them. And apparently it has the power to turn the turtles into humans. And are they going to take it? Are they going to come out of the shadows? See what they did there, yeah?
Yeah, ooh, yeah. That's clever.
It's clever, isn't it? No, it's not, actually. It's absolutely nonsense. And so you end up with... Now, tell me if this sounds familiar. You've got a team of superheroes
Yes.
Who are divided on what path of action to take.
Ah, shock horror.
Have we seen that in how many films have we seen that for?
Oh, sort of... God. Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, once is an original idea. Twice is coincidence. Three times in 2 months.
That was an eloquent rephrase. Yeah. Okay, can I give you my confession, my mea culpa?
Yeah, go on then.
Because you and I were meant to go and see this film, if not together, then at least go and see it, so we could, you know, compare notes and have intelligent things to say. I missed the media screening.
I know you did.
Therefore, I had to arrange to see it at another time and dip into my back pocket to do so. And I have to say, having seen the trailer several times during other films and having a pretty good idea what was coming my way, when it came down to it, I couldn't do it. I couldn't pay my own money and watch the whole thing. I'm sorry.
Now, you see, I'm really torn on this one. On the one hand, I have to question your commitment to the Crave cause here, obviously. But on the other hand, I am delighted that you didn't actually contribute a single penny to the furtherment of this film. That gets you a pass.
Yeah, well, actually, speaking of pennies, that's an interesting thing because, as you said yourself, you wonder why they do these things, and you might think, well, there's going to be a pot of gold for the filmmakers here. But I was just checking that just the other day, Steve, just yesterday before preparing, as we do with the professional research that goes into this podcast.
Of course.
And this film, according to the website Box Office Mojo, had a production budget of $135 million.
Incidentally, none of that went on acting classes.
No. So that was this would be, I guess, its second weekend in release now, and it still only grossed $85 million. So it's still, you know, under its production budget. I would have thought in this day and age, a big budget action spectacular, you know, is expected to earn several hundreds of millions. That hasn't got to 100 yet. So I think the public has spoken and it's agreeing with what you've got to say, Mr. McKay.
Well, with any luck, there is some justice in the world. And if this one tanks as badly as it deserves to, they won't make a third. We can only hope. There is no character development at all in this film. I mean, for pity's sake, they're turtles. What do we expect? But they just simplistic characters. One of them's the brainy one. One of them's the courageous leader one. One of them's the bronze one. That's it. That's all it is. There's nothing behind these characters. Megan Fox, I can't decide if she is being completely manipulated or if she should be deeply ashamed of herself.
Yes.
And I suspect the one who should be ashamed of himself is Michael Bay, who, even though he's the producer this time, not the director, that's Dave Green, who has the ignominy of that credit. It's got Michael Bay's misogynistic fingerprints all over it. And you cannot believe what a contrived excuse they had to dress Megan Fox up as a sexy schoolgirl.
Well, as you say, that if you've seen any other of his films, you wouldn't be surprised that takes place at all. Stock and trade for him.
It's squalid. And my daughter assures me that in other films she's actually quite good, but this isn't other films. She's rubbish. She is very attractive. That's her only saving grace in this film. There are few saving graces anywhere in this film.
Okay. All right. Well, I didn't spend my money, and I think you're going to say, don't bother.
I implore people, please. This does not deserve your money. So I think after that, quite frankly, palate cleansers are necessary. So let's move on to something more successful among recent releases. Simon, Paul Simon.
Of course, yes. Paul Simon, new release called Stranger to Stranger. It's just out. What did you make of it, Steve?
I'm a fan. Very definitely.
Cool.
You sound like you have reservations.
No, I'll kick this off. I liked it. I liked it a lot. I thought, it was superbly crafted.
Yes.
Really superbly crafted. If you got the actual physical CD and you can read some of the backstory that Paul Simon gives you about what's gone into this album, it's really fascinating stuff. He tells you that he's really delved into some musical history here. He's used several, I've never heard of this before, microtonal instruments.
No, that's a new one.
Yeah, invented by a composer called Henry Partch. Mm-hmm. And this is a man who could hear 43 tones in an octave.
Wow.
Opposed to the 12 of the normal musical scale.
That's quite remarkable.
So this man has invented some instruments to play these microtonal tones with names like cloud chamber bowls, sonic cannons, and chromelodeons, no less, and there's a few others. So Paul Simon gives you all this backstory that he's used some of these instruments to make the sounds and the music of this album. He also says that he actually was quite influenced by flamenco music, which I kind of felt I was listening, hearing more of that sort of African sound he used so successfully ever since Graceland, Steve.
The rhythms of this song are very definitely quite pervasive.
So yeah. So, but I did have a little bit of a mix of reactions in the sense that some of the songs are quite catchy and immediately accessible, like Wristband, which I thought was fantastic, and The Riverbank, for example. Others, like the title track, just required a little bit more listening, more than just one listening, to just get my head around them and start to appreciate them. But I think there's a lot to appreciate here. His voice is still superb. I mean, he could be 20 years old here.
His voice has not aged since
the
days of the 60s and Simon and Garfunkel.
Yeah, it's really something. And the stories, the songs cover stories of street angels. One is about a famous American black baseball player of the 1920s. He tells us the song Riverbank is inspired by a visit to a veterans hospital where he met soldiers who were injured in Iraq and Afghanistan. I think there's a lot of intelligence, a lot of perception, a lot of craft, as you'd expect. You liked Wristband, didn't you?
I love the groove of that song. It's got a certain bit of funk to it, yeah.
Yeah, and he is a man who is a master of lyric writing. And I just wanted to just briefly read out one verse from Wristband.
Go on.
Right at the end, he says, "The riots started slowly with the homeless and the lowly. Then they spread into the heartland, towns that never get a wristband, kids that can't afford the cool brand, whose anger is a shorthand. For you'll never get a wristband, and if you don't have a wristband, then you can't get through the door."
Beautiful.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So I thought that it was – it's not the sort of the songs here mostly, I guess, you're not going to hear on Top 40 radio, are you? It's not that type of a
– No, not at all.
No, but I know it's had some very good reviews overseas, and I think – if you give it some time, you've got a huge amount to appreciate here. I do recommend it. Just give it a bit of time to let yourself get into it, is what I would say.
I quite agree. It's intelligent. It's sophisticated. It's a deep, rich piece of music. And no, it's not immediately accessible, a lot of it. But this is the work of a man whose place in the musical pantheon is assured.
Oh, boy, absolutely.
And he gets to do what the hell he wants.
He's 74, by the way.
No.
Yeah.
That voice isn't 74.
I know. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we need to update the portrait of Dorian Gray here, don't we? The recording of Dorian Gray. Somewhere there's a really scratchy voice on a CD somewhere.
Yeah, yes.
How he retains, I mean, this beautiful bell-clear baritone that he sings in.
And he enunciates beautifully as well. That's another really nice thing about him.
He does. Now, it's worth mentioning, you know, you talked about Wristband, which is a remarkable song. It was the lead single off the album.
Yes.
And there's a couple of other songs. The Werewolf, which is the set opener and a delightful song. There's a groove in that song that is irresistible.
Yeah.
So it's worth mentioning that he actually collaborated with an Italian dance music artist named Clap Clap. Those two. That's his latest. This man knows how to choose his collaborators like nobody does.
Yeah, and, fantastic.
And I'll also mention probably his greatest collaborator is his wife.
Ah.
Edie Brickell.
Okay.
Now, she has... I mean, basically, she was a one-hit wonder.
Yeah, what was that?
Well, we're going back to 1988 here.
Oh, okay.
She had a band called Edie Brickell and New Bohemians. No definite article in there.
Right.
And they had one hit called What I Am. which was a fantastic song. I was a student at the time, and I just fell in love with that song. It was a song of the moment, and every time I hear it, I'm transported back to my student days in Pennsylvania listening to it. But it's got a certain quirky sort of vibe to it. And on songs like, for example, The Werewolf or Wristband, you can hear Edie Brickell's influence very, very clearly.
Nice stuff. Yeah. Hey, I've got a DVD of a, I think it's a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame anniversary concert with a whole bunch of different artists they'd pulled together for this special series of concerts. And they brought Simon and Garfunkel back for a set.
Oh, yeah.
And I haven't seen a lot of them do what they do live. Both their voices were very, very good. And the thing that, among other things, that really struck me about that performance was how good a guitar player Paul Simon is.
Yes.
He was playing acoustic, and he had a beautiful touch on the acoustic guitar. Looking at the credits in this new album, he does a lot of guitar work on it. And so he's a talented guitarist as well as everything else that he does. It's really worth listening out for what he's doing there. Fantastic.
Oh, he's quite a remarkable performer. I had the great good fortune to see him on the Graceland tour.
Oh,
back
nice.
In the 80s, I saw him in Birmingham in England. He is a very, very talented musician. And like I say, what he has done over the years is he subtly reinvented himself.
In
very interesting ways. He's always known where to turn next to bring something else interesting to what he does. And well, no, you're right. Stranger to Stranger is not perfect. And there are, like you say, the title track itself is a touch weak.
Yeah, I thought so too. Yes, that was one of the weaker songs in a way. It was a lovely love song, but melodically it didn't have some of the impact of the others, for me anyway.
No,
but
there's a couple of instrumentals. For example, In the Garden of Edie, which is clearly named after...
Yes.
Mrs. Simon, little instrumental interlude there, but when it's good, Lord, it's good.
It is good, and I would certainly recommend you spend a dollar or two on this one for sure if you can.
I'd be right behind you on that one, mate.
I stepped outside the backstage door to breathe some nicotine. And maybe check my mailbox, see if I can read the screen. Then I heard a click, the stage door lock. I knew just what that meant. I'm gonna have to walk around the block if I wanna get in. A wristband, my man, you got to have a wristband. If you don't have a wristband, my man, you don't get through the door.
Now, what about some live music? You have actually dipped into another band which has been around for a bit, hasn't it? Haven't you?
Yeah, going back to my youth here, I remember when Big Country first made it big in the UK back in the 80s.
Wasn't their first big song called Big Country?
It was called In a Big Country.
In a Big Country.
A Big Country. That was their big breakout single from their first album. It was back in 1983.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Exactly,
okay.
Yeah. And you remember that they had the heavily processed guitars that were meant to sound like bagpipes.
Yeah, I remember the bag. Yeah, I was. Yes, okay. I guess on first listening, I always wondered what I was listening to, but they were actually guitars, were they?
Heavily processed guitars.
Okay, right.
That were meant, because they in the modern parlance, you would say they identified as Scottish.
Yeah. Yeah.
The reality is that the two mainstays of the band, Stuart Adamson and Bruce Watkins, neither of them were actually Scottish natives.
Oh, where are they from?
Well, Adamson England. Was born in Manchester, and Watkins was born in Ontario, but they both grew up in Scotland, so we'll allow it.
Yes. But, and how have they aged, Mr. McCabe?
Well, rather unfortunately, Adamson died 15 years ago.
Okay.
Which makes difficult questions when the front man, the founder, the singer and the songwriter of a band is no longer around. Is it still that band?
My first instinct is to say perhaps not, but what do you think? I mean, having seen them,
like I say Bruce Watkins was the center of their very, very distinctive guitar sound.
Yep.
They've got a new singer in. They've had a few singers over the years to replace Adamson. The bloke they got in on a permanent basis now is a chap named Simon. I think it's pronounced Howe, H-O-U-G-H. We'll go with Howe, shall we?
Okay, let's do it.
And he does a decent facsimile of Adamson's fairly distinctive howl. So we'll allow it.
Okay, yes.
And at the heartbeat of the band's sound is their drummer is a chap named Mark Brzezicki.
Mm-hmm.
And he is one of the most accomplished drummers I have heard in a very, very long time. So overall, yeah, I was really glad I went last night.
Good.
They were booked into the King's Arms, which is a tiny little venue.
Yeah,
It was packed. They had to put on a second night. They're there again tonight.
Okay.
The audience was lapping up every second of it. There was one chap who was right down the front of the stage with a big big country banner, and apparently he travelled all the way to New Zealand to see them play.
Wow.
When he was asked what else he's going to do in New Zealand after tonight's show, he said, "Oh, I'm not staying in New Zealand. They're playing in Brisbane next week."
God, that's devotion for you.
There were some very, very devoted fans there last night. They knew all the words. They knew all the songs. They loved every second of it. It's a long time since I've seen, in a small venue like that, with a band that old, such energy and passion in a performance.
Great. Well, and tell me, I think you were similarly impressed with the opening act, Steve.
I was indeed. I'd never heard of them before. A bunch called Table Fox. Is an odd name for a band, I agree.
Table Fox, as in F-O-X.
As in a small canid on the thing you eat off, yes. Bizarre
yes.
name, but who knows? We'll not ask. All I know is good, solid, well-performed, classic rock.
Okay.
Auckland band, apparently, although the one guitarist admitted to being from Hamilton, but we won't hold that against him.
No, don't. Okay. Table Fox, all right.
If you see him around, give him a look. They were very good.
Lovely, lovely stuff.
Now, Simon, new music, who have you been talking to this week?
Right, yes, well, you know, most of the time on Crave, Steve, we've tended, I guess, to talk to musicians who've already made an impact, whether it's here or overseas. I mean, I can't think we got any bigger than when your Debbie went to see Prince this year. and we've seen some pretty good international acts like Hozier and New Zealand acts like Jordan Luck and Avalanche City and the like. But this week I got the chance to talk to a young guy who's very much at the outset of his career. He's just trying to find a foothold for himself. He's only 25. He's a singer-songwriter based in Auckland who calls himself Miller. And he's just released his first EP. It's called Shoot Me in the Heart. And I caught up with him at his home this week. Crave has come out of the studio, so to speak, and I'm here to talk to Auckland musician Miller about his first release, his first ever release, which is called Shoot Me in the Heart.
That's the one, yeah.
Before we talk about the music, Miller, let's find out a little bit about you, if that's okay.
Totally.
You're a new kid on the block, right?
Yep, just coming out now.
you're a young guy, you're in your mid-20s. How long have you been into music for?
Well, I've kind of grown up in a musical household. My dad's always been playing music around the house, so always surrounded by it. But my parents, I mean, I was always the kid tapping on things and making my own drum kits out of kitchen pots and pans and chopsticks. So they said, "Do you want to learn the drums?" And I said, "No." No was my favorite word when I was a little kid. I just say no to everything pretty much. So it took a bit of persuading to get me into music. But at about age 11, intermediate school, I thought, "Oh yeah, now's the right time." Joined the intermediate school rock band called the Fluffy Pumpkins.
Excellent name.
And then just kind of went from there, and yeah, drums and guitar and piano, and now singing and songwriting.
And so, as I say, you're in your mid-20s, so at what point, I mean, while you were kept the musical interest going, were you training or educating yourself to do something else as well?
I've dreamed and wanted to do several things growing up. I wanted to be a footballer at first, play for my favourite team over in England, but then I wanted to be a doctor, and then I wanted to be a zookeeper, and then, yeah, it wasn't until I started music that I really wanted to do it and be a drummer. But then I thought it's quite hard to make a living just from drums. So that's when I started learning other instruments. I thought the more I could do, the better.
Yeah.
And once I'd learned, you know, guitar and piano and could write my own songs, I thought, well, I need to be able to record them. So I went and studied audio engineering, and now I'm kind of doing more of that as well. And that supports my music pretty much on a day-to-day basis.
Okay, audio engineer. I've listened to your songs on your EP.
Mm-hmm.
They're mostly ballads. Would that be fair to say? Well, they're not hard rockers, are they? They're a particular style. You've got a very
quite sensitive, melancholy.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Tell me a little bit about that style of music. How that's evolved for you?
Yeah. Well, again, you know, start of high school, I was listening to Metallica and AC/DC and Bon Jovi and Guns N' Roses, and the first songs I started to write were epic power ballad 80s anthems. I'd do all the music, but then I quickly realized I don't really have the voice or the stage persona to kind of carry off that kind of the epicness of those sort of songs. But it was just a natural progression to pick up an acoustic guitar, and I didn't want to sing at first. Singing was quite hard for me. I'd record myself singing and then play it to my family as opposed to singing in front of them. The thought of singing in front of anyone was horrible. So, yeah, just went about it that way. And then just as I started writing songs, it just more about what I was feeling at the time. The EP is just my life for the last wee while. And that's what's been captured. The bit of sadness, bit of happiness, bit of melancholy. And, I mean, that's a mid-20s sensitive guy for you, I guess.
Yeah. It's lovely. It's produced in a very nice way. It's the instruments are all come through really well. How involved were you in the actual recording and producing of it? Totally, I guess.
Pretty much, yeah. Because I'm still doing my own thing. I've fully funded everything myself, and everything I save goes towards it. Recorded it myself with the help of my dad. He also, you know, produced it a bit and gave me tips and to keep me pushing along and rolling along. But pretty much complete control, which I think is hard, but also quite important, I think, for an artist to know all aspects, as well as performing and writing as well. So you need to know what goes on in the recording side, what goes on in the mixing side, the producing side. So I'm not kept in the dark there. I had my fingers over all of it.
Yes, it sounds like a good idea. Let's get a little plug in while we can.
Yeah.
For people who want to hear it or look at the video, where can they go to buy the music or listen to the music?
Buying the music or listening to it, you can go any of the major platforms, so iTunes, or stream it on Spotify, YouTube. You can stream it or see the official music video there, which is quite cool as well. But if you want to really support me, just find me on my Bandcamp page or my Facebook page and get a direct link, and that way the money comes straight to me as opposed to through all the different channels.
And so I just need to look up Miller.
Miller, yeah.
M-I-L-L-E-R.
Miller Music, yeah.
Cool. I want to ask you a bit more about that video, but just you mentioned your voice and how earlier on you were, understandably as a young guy, a little bit nervous about singing in front of people. You've got a really melodic voice, I think. But it's as you said yourself, it's not you're not belting it out like Bon Jovi or Springsteen or someone. But do you think, I'm interested to know where you think your voice might take you, because it's, I wonder if it's got still more growing to go.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the last year and a half of writing these songs and the last 6 months of doing this EP, you finish the EP and you go, oh man, I'm so much better at singing than I was 6 months ago. And you want to do it again, but That's the progression of being an artist, I suppose. And I mean, yeah, I'm always listening to new music and new singers coming out and hearing different tones and ways of singing. I'm always trying to do it. And I suppose it's me trying to do it and not quite being able to do it and finding my own way to do it.
Yeah.
That makes it quite unique, I guess.
Well, as you say, that's what an artist is being.
Yeah.
And what about public performances? How have you had an opportunity to get out there and play your original music?
Yeah, I'm still a soloist because I did everything myself, and I don't quite have the street cred of to get a band behind me yet. I'm still getting out there and getting people knowing me. So most of my shows, open mic nights, support slots, are just me and an acoustic guitar, harmonica, which I quite like as well, because it's quite intimate and it really strips the songs back and you can really listen to the lyrics.
Okay. And again, I'll just by way of a plug, I mean, are there any venues around Auckland that if people did want to go and see you live that you appear on a regular basis?
I've done a few pretty sweet gigs at the Portland Pub House in Kingsland. But the Vic in Devonport, there's a great open mic night there. Kingsland Folk Club, I understand, is starting up again. And I'll probably, you know, pop my head in there as well. Just anywhere, really. I'll keep everyone updated on Facebook.
Cool. Now, I want to ask you a little bit about the video for the title track of your EP,
yep.
Shoot Me in the Heart. It's a really interesting idea for people who haven't seen it yet. It starts off with what looks like a home movie of a couple of kids running around, and it's got a date, 1997, I think. It's April 1997 it starts, and the date changes a little bit as the video goes on.
Totally.
Kids, a boy and a girl, and they're playing together, and we see you, a bit of you singing in the instrumentation.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a clear play on the words as you listen to it. The lyrics are "shoot me," and there's some kind of military-style references in the lyrics to a certain extent.
Yeah.
But it's "shoot me in the heart," which evokes sort of a more romantic type of feeling to it. So just talk me through the message of the song and the message that you're getting across in the video. I'd be really interested to hear how you thought your way through that.
Yeah, the song keeps taking on new meanings as I grow up and go through different things and heartbreak and that kind of thing. I suppose on a surface level, the song is, about love or lost love and being shot in the heart or breakups or that kind of thing. And totally when I got approached by my good friends who wanted to make a music video, they said, "Tell us what it's about." And I said, "No, you tell me what it's about." And so, they totally picked up that brokenhearted kind of feeling, which is what the video is based on. But all the military references, I feel if you dive a bit deeper into the song, you can totally find, military references, political, religious references.
Yeah, yep.
And that's just kind of
the metaphor.
Yeah, another metaphor or another look on maybe, the state of the world that we're in at the moment and just commentary on that, I suppose.
Sure. Yeah. There's an interesting physical symbol that pops up in the song. You see it at the start and it's all the way through there, and I think it might even be the last shot in the video.
Yes.
What initially looks like a metal circle made up of little metal circles, and after a while you begin to think, this looks like sort of like from a revolver or the cylinder of a gun, perhaps.
Totally, yes.
Right, that's what it is.
Yeah. So I'd already written the song, and we're trying to think of some cool cover artwork to go with the release, and it was quite a freaky kind of accident because me and my brother were kind of working on it together and thinking of ideas, and we both emailed each other at the same time with the same idea, which was, how about a gun cartridge where one of the bullet chambers, I suppose it's called, is in the shape of a heart. So it's being shot in the heart, shooting the heart like the bullet.
Yes.
So it everything fell into place perfectly. We both just looked at each other and thought, this is perfect. We've got it right now.
Fantastic. Well, it's been a great pleasure to talk to you and to get to know you a little bit. I know this is just the start of your career, as you say, or at least formally. You've been probably playing music for a long time, I know. But hey, thanks for talking to Crave, and we'd love to, get in touch with you again and see how you're getting on, and we could maybe play some more of your music.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
I'd love to be back.
Fantastic. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
So that's Miller Steve. I think the thing to watch with a young artist like that is that to see what his second and maybe other albums sound like. This is just his first go at it.
Yep.
And this is reflecting a view of life from a 25-year-old. The songs are quite thoughtful and heartfelt. They're not rocking, barnstorming songs, which are going to assault you, in between the ears and knock you for six. They're not trying to do that. But I think he's got some genuine talent. He could probably develop in several directions. He's definitely got an ear for a melody. He's got the mind to write a good lyric. And look, you can only hope that continues to develop. And the other thing that's interesting, when I went to meet him at his home, I kind of discovered that in a small town, even like Auckland, it's not, it is a small town. You can bump into people with all sorts of connections,
Oh, yes. Everybody knows everybody. It's quite terrifying sometimes.
Oh, gosh. Well, for a start, I got to meet his dad.
Oh, yeah.
Who's a guy called Phil Yule. And Phil actually is pretty well known around the town as a radio engineer. He's worked on radio stations for many years.
Now, one of those wouldn't by any chance be Radio New Zealand, would it?
I think he's probably, if you go back far enough, yes. But I think in more recent times he's worked on commercial stations. But I remember the name very well. And then it turned out that Phil's married to – this is all gets a bit complicated, but not really.
I'll take notes.
Yeah, please do. There'll be a test later. Phil's married to a woman whose brother I went to primary school with.
Oh, dear.
In the 1960s. And then I didn't know this, that Miller himself, who's 25, he was at the same primary school as my daughter.
Oh, wonderful.
Now, that doesn't – that's not influencing, of course, Steve, what I have to say about Miller, but and I only found this out when I went there. I would recommend this EP. I think it's well worth a listen, and I think it's well worth seeing where this young guy goes with his music. Let's hope he can stick with it. By the way, just as if you're wondering how people can get to do all this music, the dad, Phil, has got his own recording studio at home.
Well, that does help a little bit.
It's called Voice Box, and that's where he recorded it. So I think, Steve, we could probably, with not too much difficulty, add a few links on our website for people to go and have link up to Miller's Facebook page, or perhaps a link to the YouTube where his video for the first song is playing. That shouldn't be too hard for us to do, should it?
I think we can find a way to do that. That sounds reasonable.
Yeah, so that's Miller, and a good luck to him and a great first effort.
Soldier, what's the point? I told you, load up shotgun Jesus and hallelujah, blow them all to pieces and shoot me in the heart. Baby, shot me down. Shoot me in the heart.
Now, where are we? We've done music, we've done movies.
What's left?
Bit of telly, isn't it?
You found the time to watch a little bit in all of this?
Yes, I did. Are you into the watching binge TV, Steve?
I have my moments, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I be binging on next?
Well, in the last week on TV One, they did an interesting way of broadcasting it. They broadcast six episodes across 2 weeks, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday 1 week, and then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday the next week of a program called Happy Valley, season two, the second season of Happy Valley, a British crime drama.
So you say a crime drama. I take it that this valley is not as happy as it might be.
Oh, no, not at all, not at all. In fact, when I was on afternoons, Steve, this program, the first season of Happy Valley, became quite a debate. I was chatting with another contributor about which was better, this one or that other. There was another quite a high-profile British crime drama called Broadchurch.
Yes, that was the David Tennant one, wasn't it?
So we were having a bit of a debate about which was better. I liked Broadchurch, but I actually thought Happy Valley was better. And this, I think I was right, because I think the second season that I've just watched hasn't altered that view. It is gritty. It's dark, but occasionally light where it has to be. Got a very good, compelling storyline and fantastic characters, and none better than the lead actor or actress. It's a woman called Sarah Lancashire.
Mm-hmm.
She actually goes all the way back to Coronation Street days.
She does, yes.
Yeah. She plays Sergeant Catherine Coward, and what a performance. It's fantastic. I really can't speak highly enough of what a fantastic actor she is. Tough, The role requires her to be tough and compassionate. This is a character who's endured absolute hell in her private life because her daughter gets raped and then commits suicide. And then she knows that the rapist, who is the father of her grandson, is still around. He's in prison, but he's still around in the picture. He's haunting the grandson. It's a sort of a nightmare, really, really. But Sarah Lancashire carries it off in a way that you just are with her every step of the way. It's just fantastic. The writer, Sally Wainwright, a lot of credit has to go to her. She writes real people, gets under their skin, shows their faults and their strengths. Catherine has this alcoholic sister called Claire, played by an actress called Siobhan Finneran. I hope I'm saying that right. Wonderful support actress. So really, really strong. I don't know about you, Steve. I often wonder when you watch fictional stories and you wonder whether the script writers are coming up with fantastical ideas for plots that actually would never happen in real life.
Or could it be that there's something of their own private life in them somehow?
Yeah, but I don't know about you. As I'm getting older, I'm sort of wondering actually that no script writer can come up with anything actually that will rival what happens in real life. In this second season, among other things that's going on with this terrible father of the grandson, we have a senior cop who has a fling with a woman and then kills the woman after she blackmails him. We have another woman, single, middle-aged, who falls in love with this violent prisoner, the father of Catherine's grandson, falls in love with him to such an extent she carries out schemes on his behalf.
Oh dear!
To undermine her family. And I thought afterwards, actually, that sort of thing does happen.
I think it does.
Yeah. I think it happens quite a bit. So I think that although a lot is compressed in it for the sake of a TV drama, you really find it extremely believable. The acting is fantastic. The script is great. And I really can't recommend it highly enough. You can watch it on demand. I think season one is still around too. The only one little thing I had that was I struggled with just a little bit was the accent occasionally got a little bit thick for me and I just missed a little bit of dialogue, but that was a very minor point. I thought
tell you what, I'll come around one evening and I'll translate for you.
Yeah, would you? I think it's set in the sort of – this town is in Yorkshire or somewhere in Yorkshire, so it's not far from your neck of the woods. And it's interesting. It ends in a way where you could see the clear opportunity for a third series. Apparently Sarah Lancashire has said she doesn't really want to do that, but I do hope she changes her mind because it's really quality stuff and I really recommend it. So there you go. Have I said enough good things about it yet?
Well, you sold me. I will definitely be looking this one up.
Yeah, it's just got that. And the other thing about it, do you know, we were just talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and you said how good Megan Fox looked. I mean, you know, physically attractive woman. Isn't that one of the things that really strikes you as the difference between American and British dramas on television and in the movies, that generally speaking, the Brits just seem to come up with a set of actors who just look like real people and they haven't stepped out of a fashion magazine?
Yes, you do actually get tired after a while. I mean, it's nice to look at attractive people, don't get me wrong. But yeah. After a while, when you think that, okay, everybody in this world is impossibly gorgeous.
Yeah.
You think, this makes no sense. You're right. In Britain, and I'm obviously being a bit patriotically self-serving here, I realise, but we do tend to focus more on actual acting ability. Call me old-fashioned, but, you know.
Call me old-fashioned, that's right. Yeah. Oh, anyway, look, that was fantastic. Now, we're getting on a bit. Steve, what else should we be looking out for coming up in the next week or two?
Well, we prejudged The Turtles, and I was expecting it to be complete and utter twaddle. It was merely just not particularly good. So yeah. I shouldn't prejudge films too badly, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Go on.
When was it? When were we talking about? 16th of June sees the opening of Warcraft.
Warcraft. Now, is this a video game originally?
Yes, it is.
Right. Okay. So that might lead one to think that perhaps we're not going to expect too much.
I think Citizen Kane's place as the greatest film ever made is probably safe.
Now, I have seen the trailer for this. Have you, Steve?
Two or three times, yes.
Yeah, yeah. It looks like one of those sort of epic fantasy settings in another land, another world, and battles yes. galore, and yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I want to be Tolkien when I grow up.
Okay, Warcraft, right.
So I'll be there on Wednesday night. I'm sure you, with your usual commitment to quality entertainment, will be right next to me.
Of course, yes.
On an altogether more sophisticated level,
yes.
On Tuesday night, I'll be at the press screening of Me Without You.
Now, is that the one with the Game of Thrones actress?
Yeah, it was about Emilia Clarke, yes.
Clarke? It is.
Yes. Now, this is it's one that's actually been coming in for a lot of criticism overseas. The story is basically a girl in a small town forms an unlikely bond with a recently paralysed man because she's been hired as his carer. And there's been a lot of criticism of this film in that basically the only thing of any memorableness about the man is he's recently paralysed, and that's it. That's all he is. He's not anything more than that. He's a bit of a cipher, and it's more about her than it is about him.
Yeah.
That's the criticism I've been hearing about it. Based on a very successful novel by Jojo Moyes, who apparently also wrote the screenplay.
Okay.
So I think open minds are required.
I think so. I think so, definitely. Okay, very good. That makes me think that just your description there brings to mind another film of not that of relatively recent times, with Helen Hunt playing a sex worker who cares for a man who's paralyzed. What's it called? I can't think of it. It was quite a well-received and critically acclaimed film, and it sort of has a pretty broad comparison in the premise there. That film did give you an insight into both characters, which I think that's why it worked pretty well. But it'll be interesting to see how this one goes. So we'll be next time.
Yeah, you're talking about The Sessions.
I am. Yes, that's the one. Yeah.
Yes. I think there's Points of Contact probably, but I don't think it goes quite as far as that one. But yeah, it could be an interesting one to talk about. We've already mentioned in the past, but it's worth having a very quick recap of the music that's coming up in the near future. We'll just have a quick mention of those. By the time we're on the air again next, Leo Sayer and Lulu will have been and gone.
Okay.
That could actually be quite an entertaining one. And the one I'm actually really excited about myself, because it sounds too cheesy for words, Steel Panther. I don't know if you're familiar.
I'm not. I'm sorry. Steel Panther.
But you can if I mention the name Steel Panther for a rock band, close your eyes and tell me what you see.
I see heavy metal.
And what do they look like?
Long hair, yeah. Tats, tight black jeans.
That's the one. Basically, they started out life as not quite full on Spinal Tap, but they're basically a comedy glam rock band.
Oh, really? Oh,
who have done so well that they've actually kind of gone legit.
That's a good story.
It is, and they're playing the power station in Auckland on June the 26th.
Ah, Steel Panther, a name to conjure with. Okay, fantastic. All right. Hey, well, look, that's Crave. Thanks for listening. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at podcast@cravepodcast.com.
You can find us on Facebook, or you can follow us on Twitter @CravePodcast.
It's been lovely to talk to you again. I'm Simon Mercer.
I'm Steve McCabe.
And that's what's been entertaining us this week.